Welcome, everyone, to the February meeting of the Streets and Sidewalks Committee. I'd like to welcome everybody that's here, and we have lots of projects to take a look at, lots of information as it leads to next year, and lots of decisions to be made aware of. So, Debbie?
Yes.
Would you please call the roll?
Sure. Gaverka?
Here.
Grinnell?
Here.
Narduzzi?
Here.
All right, and I can entertain a motion from someone related to the minutes.
Move to approve the minutes from December 4th, 2019 meeting.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
All right, very good. And we have a fairly comprehensive agenda today, so without further ado, Mr. Service Director Leon Karas, will you...
Mr. Chairman, just before, I have a 5:30 hard stop, so I don't want to be rude during the meeting, but 5:30 I got to take off, so...
Okay.
I have dinner.
Thank you.
Just a quick update on the 2019-2020 winter season so far. We've continued with some periodic catch basin cleaning, and we are going to continue throughout the spring and summer. We've already gotten through about 60% of the catch basins in the city. The plan is to get through another 20% by the end of the summer season. So we're in our fourth year, so we'll be at 80% of the city. The catch basins will be cleaned. We obtained some new plow equipment pricing. So Dennis and I have been working on that. We have 5 trucks on the capital plan. So we're looking to hopefully kind of get that on the agenda for council's approval either this month or next month. The sooner we get it on, the quicker we get the trucks.
What's the wait time, the lead time you need? Do you have them by next winter?
So if we get them in the queue, if we get the POs and everything approved come this council meeting, we can have them probably October, November. If we wait till March, probably November, December.
Still fully equipped?
Fully equipped and ready to roll.
Yep.
So Dennis has been working on getting that all organized, and I think he has the packet ready for council to look at. One of the other big projects is obviously, you know, Brookside project. Our sewer crew has been up there assisting the engineering department with televising some of the storm mains and doing some dye testing, trying to locate and make sure everything's going to be connected. Looking forward to 2020 for crack sealing. These are the streets that we're going to look at. A lot of these were streets that were previously resurfaced, and we're just going to try to stay on top of them and make sure that that we have no water infiltration to kind of, you know, deteriorate the roads more quickly. So if there's any streets that you don't see on this list that you might have added, you know, just let me know.
Yeah, Leon, don't forget to put Grandview
on that. Yep.
Yep. That road is mostly doing well, but where those spaces are, where there's movement.
Okay.
Thank
you. So yeah, we'll get that on there. And then second,
when you crack seal it, there's an area on the street that needs some cosmetic surface fixing, asphalt repair.
Yes.
Do they do that before they crack seal?
Yes, yes, yes. We usually do the...
Because some of the streets have small areas and be water. It'll be exacerbated by the time the season's over. But if you're going to crack seal, we should repair those spot holes.
And that's typically we do that as an as-needed basis.
Okay.
So we have that, especially with our, you know, we have a planer and everything now, so we take care of that. So, and then sidewalks for 2020, I think we're going to focus on, there's a couple on 2nd Street that we wanted to get taken care of, and then I think there's two on Sunset that kind of we wanted to do a couple years ago, and then we didn't get them done, and then the next year we moved on to other areas. But we want to get back to those couple of streets, and then we want to do everything on Brestville Road south of Selig. And if we get it, and if things go quickly and well, we're going to look at east Pleasant Valley, west of Brexville Road, and then we'll start heading north towards the square on Brexville Road as well.
There's probably 20, 25 spots throughout the community where...
Yeah, there's some pretty big
gaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where we should... it's only 2 slabs.
Yeah.
That need to be fixed.
So that's typically what we do. If there's something raised, we'll take out 2 slabs. We won't just take out one. We try to take out 2 to make it one larger piece. And we've worked with the building department in the past and engineering to make sure that we're doing everything and that conforms to, you know, specs and regulations. So,
Mayor, isn't it interesting when you're traveling the sidewalks and campaigning how you discover how that 2 inches of lip.
We know where the, bad ones are.
Definitely.
And then.
And you, with the milder winter, you've been able to do other stuff that normally you just do, you know, up to October, November, and then you have to stop. But this year, you've been able to, because I saw the chippers out there today, with the one day.
Yeah, we're keeping a chipper out as much as we can. We try to keep the leaf trucks out as long as we could. So, you know, we try to take care of as much as we can, as long as we can, while the weather permits. Today, we actually planted, I think, 8 trees in the park. So all the, we had 8 trees that we had, you know, had for the evergreens that we had for the Christmas tree lighting. And we're putting up some screening, planted those 8 trees along.
There's an elm wood. On the north side of the marginal road through the park. I saw you were putting them on the south side.
Well, we asked, we didn't choose those locations. We asked, you know, the rec director, and that's where he wanted them. So next year, we'll buy more trees again, and then for the holiday season, and we'll plant them again, probably the same way. And then just asphalt maintenance. I mean, we talked about strip patching several areas along Stone Road. So we're going to do some strip patching over there. It's not a heavily traveled street anymore, so I think our crew does a pretty good job getting some of those things done.
What's the importance of cleaning the roads in the wintertime? I see the street cleaners out.
Just because there's a lot of salt on the road, and that salt goes into the catch basins and kind of causes the calcium buildup in those catch basins. So we're trying to keep that salt from going in there, and we're trying to keep any debris from going into those catch basins, just to kind of keep the water, the storm water flowing good.
It's not just, the salt's not pure anymore.
No,
either, so
it's a lot of
you get some
sediment,
granular ingredients that stay on, go down the catch basin.
And so it stays there.
And if it's not real cold and it's a little wet, it works better, doesn't it, if the back truck?
Oh, yeah. So we're always sending the back truck out when it's above freezing, so we're making sure that it's all, you know, but yeah, we don't want, and plus just, I think it makes the city look a lot better, you know.
Well, and the other thing is, when they were working the catch basins, Cass was working on Highland, and I'm looking at just all the mortar around all the brickwork that they have down there. That's why they got to rebuild them faster, so if you can get it up before it goes down, the salt up before it goes down the drain, that helps.
And that kind of concludes my update.
Any questions? Any further questions for Leon? Okay, then we will move on. And if you, depending on your schedule, if you need to leave or if you need to stay. Tom, you're up.
Yes, thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to stay real quick for this next item. It specifically deals with the crack seal. This was the final invoice from our contract in 19 with Specialized Construction, and I tried to highlight, you know, one question we've been asked, I think Councilman Narduzzi has asked numerous times, like what's our, trying to get an apples and apples comparison between service, between our maintenance contract, and with the service department now doing crack seal. So I identified last year 13,354 gallons of crack seal material was placed. And when I added the cost was $9.99 a gallon, but I added in some costs for mobilization, maintenance, traffic, bonds, and insurance, and just divided through the math and got to arrived at $10.40 a gallon as the installed cost that the city paid last year for a numerous amount of streets. And then we tried to, Leon took some time. And Leon, you can walk, maybe discuss how you went through the methodology.
So we bought our crack sealer back in 2017. And since, down 2017, I didn't use those numbers because that was kind of like our learning curve year. But over the last two seasons, we've applied 3,600 gallons. The per gallon cost is $4.27. Our average daily, our average per day gallons is just under 100 gallons. Our average material cost per day. Obviously, then we crack sealed for about 4 weeks in 18 and about a little over 3 weeks in 19. Average labor cost per day, total material cost and labor. So we came up with about $10.68 per gallon applied. And that's what we're doing right now.
So it's about a wash almost as far as between the contract and the...
Yeah, shockingly close.
It was just, yeah, I was kind of surprised when I saw that, but...
You do the crack sealing first in the season, then you do the concrete work?
Yeah, so...
It's the same group, I think.
Yeah, so we typically, we try to crack sealing early and all of our asphalt early, and then we you know, then we run to 4th of July home days, a lot of other projects, and then we kind of do the concrete maintenance or the sidewalk maintenance.
And you use a different methodology or in terms of than our contractor, blow them out and dry out?
Yeah, we do the exact same thing that they do.
Same process.
Yeah, so we blow them out, we put the metal cracks solution on, or the solution on there so it doesn't get tracked up on the vehicles, and we have, but we're only applying, you know, it's one guy, you know, applying. We got a driver, somebody blows them out, somebody cleans them out, blower cleaner, driver, somebody who applies it, and then we have one person that's applying the material to, doesn't track up, and then that same person is driving a pickup truck and moving up the work zones as we, but we're only focusing on, you know, low, you know, the side streets, the residential streets, and or the very low traffic areas, so we're not doing Brecksville Road.
Trying to do the main streets.
Yes, exactly.
Support ancillary streets.
Yeah. And it's good, so sometimes in other areas throughout the year, it's, I think it's good filler work, and then it allows us, when we do asphalt patches, it allows us to make a better patch and seal up those patches as soon as we're done.
And from a standpoint of the sheer volume of the material, I mean, you can see what we're pumping 10,000, 13,000 gallons per contract, and it's a smaller volume of material, but very cost competitive, identical pricing. We feel, I know at one time there was maybe a thought to maybe replace the annual contract with services efforts, and we feel like the best approach is to kind of work in parallel and focus on main routes with our contractor and Leon's smaller side streets, get more work done in any given year. So we feel like, so that's the, in the bottom right, that's really why I put this on the agenda. Thumbs up or thumbs down, do you want us to continue to bid out the contract? Because it's, you know, it's wintertime. This is now would be when we would be putting that bid together and getting it out so that we can hit the ground running here in the spring.
So will that bid be lower if the city guys are going to do the side streets? But they used to do all the streets, correct?
Yeah, basically the list of streets that we give them is what they march to. They don't really care where they go, but they know that we try to be honest with them up front in the bid so they know how to manage the traffic if they're on Rockside Road working at night versus in the side streets. So we would pare down the side streets.
This price includes like a Rockside Road or someplace where they have to accommodate our traffic schedules.
Right.
They just can't come to 8 o'clock in the morning and close down a road. We don't allow that, right?
No.
Can we make that part of the bid that we have to do it in the evening or on weekends?
When we list the major routes on Rockside, that's right in there.
Okay.
At night, during the week, at night, or on weekends. So they know that.
I'd prefer our service department does the small, you know, the side streets and everything and the contract, because they're more, I mean, for safety reasons, for employees.
Right.
And it's worked well, having the dual system.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too. And if we list, we could still list residential streets. We could put it at the back. And normally, they pick off the streets from top to bottom, because that's normally how we prioritize them and list them. So if there's ever an event where Leon Service can't get to a number of them, or vice versa, if they get more picked off, then we would just, you know, we could fluctuate, be flexible in any given year. The contractors are real good to work with.
Has the work gone down since we've had the city? I mean, the last 3 or 4 years, I mean, the contract's not as big now, or has it remained the same?
You know, we've started to supplement other work, like the mastic surface seal.
Oh,
we started to pump into this contract. Also, steel coating some parking lots for the Civic Center, Rec Center. We started to, as alternate bids, or to increase. So the dollar value of the contract is, that one was pushing $210,000. But so I'd say the dollar value of the contract has gone up, but the
scope of work is expanded.
Yeah, for crack seals, probably maintain. It's the other stuff that's gone up.
Now the mastics, are you satisfied with that? I mean, you've had now about 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I think there's some value to it, and it's very specific. You got to target the right street, low volume roads, fairly straight, not a lot of turns, because that's where the friction starts to peel that stuff right off, and the volume of cars, same with traffic. So I think it has its place in the maintenance treatment training.
Doesn't it prolong the life of the...
Yes, yes. Provides that sacrificial service for the sun to be on and for...
I'm going to Europe for that annual environmental show, the largest in the world, and I'll let you know if there's anything out there. Europe usually is ahead of us in terms of their pavements, especially in Germany.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, I'd like to know.
I have a couple questions for you. You specialize, a union or non-union contractor?
You know, I don't know. I would say union, but we don't require that as much as prevailing wage. Our contract's always prevailing wage, but we don't specify union or non-union.
And you know, I see 13,000 some gallons on their bid or invoice and 3,600 on ours. Does that, to you who do this work, does that, their 13,000 match our 3,600? I mean, is that... You know, are the quantities reasonable based on what we did versus what they did? Are their quantities accurate? Any reason to doubt that if we did it in 3,600, shouldn't they be at 3,600? Or, you know,
they're doing a lot more valuable.
Yeah, I just want to know if the things they're doing make sense to you.
And our 3,600 is in the course of two seasons. Their 13,000 is one season.
Yeah, it's all the more reason. It's like, is their quantity right?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
They put 900 gallons a day. They empty their hopper in one day. That's what they like to do, just to make sure the stuff gets drained out of their equipment. And so they make good production.
And then my last question is, with regard to our labor days, are our workers able to accommodate that work in their normal? Is that creating overtime?
No, not at all. No, it's...
We have the capacity, the manpower to do this already, exactly. So it's not an added overtime.
No. Has Specialized had the contract every, they've been, how many bids do you usually get for?
Not many.
It's a Specialized service.
Yeah, that's sometimes they're the only bidder, I think.
There for a while, a company called Crossroads was bidding it. I think they're out of Strongerville area. Mm-hmm. And they've stopped. They haven't bid it in a while. And we use a special type of material. It's a type 3, I think, product versus... The others, type 1, 2, and 4, is, I think, Leon, you might be using a 1 or 2.
Yeah, I think a 2.
It's a little bit different, and it takes special equipment, specialized equipment, fiberized, and it's certain temperatures, it's very sensitive. So it's, hence the reason why we don't typically get too many bids. But year in and year out, even though sometimes they know they're the only bidder, their prices are very... Competitive year, consistent.
Is material costs going up this year, or is it pretty much stabilized with the oil price?
It seems consistent, yeah. Hopefully we're going to be very similar. So, okay, that's good to know. So then the answer is that we will put together the bid, and we'll get it out and bring that before you here in another month or two, we hope. Okay, the next item on the agenda. Leon, thanks for sticking around.
Thank you.
This is just a housekeeping item. It's a piece of legislation that's on the agenda here next week. It's ordinance 2020-17, and that's a graphic of San Fernando and Ariel. It's a recent home that was built a year or two ago.
Yeah, I think I did the contract for it. Ventura sold that property.
Nice home on a nice lot, and just came to find out when we did the review of the site plan that the cul-de-sac is pretty small. And it's only a 60-foot radius. This is a diagram of the easement. Our minimum, the code requires 65 feet for a radius on a cul-de-sac for the right-of-way. San Fernando was 60, and it required an easement to push the sidewalks out of the right-of-way. And you'll notice that's what this exhibit is meant to demonstrate, that the one home that's out there, we do have an easement. There's a vacant lot that hasn't been built on that apparently we have already secured an easement. So this was the third one on that lot that's in yellow. One that's out there that doesn't have an easement, we could clearly see on the aerial, that sidewalk is well outside the right-of-way on that easement, on the lot to the right. And I suppose it hasn't caused any grief so far, and I know that property just transferred a short time ago, so apparently it didn't cause any problems on a transfer with an encroachment or anything. So we'll probably just sleep the dogs lie, but that's as simple as the issue is. It's just a sidewalk easement. Yeah, it's housekeeping. We like to have an ordinance to document the date and time it was accepted, and it's already been recorded. This document went through the process and was approved, and we've secured it, and it's just a matter now just passing an ordinance to get comply with the books.
Is it on the agenda?
Yeah, it is on.
It's on the agenda.
It's on the agenda. This happens to be the plat, and it shows the 60-foot call-out. Tried to show you a example, so Timber Ridge, right on the other side, that one met the code, 65 feet. So there, I'm sure the sidewalks fit inside that right away nicely. A couple other examples.
Oh, what was the radius again for San Fernando?
What's that?
What was the radius again for San Fernando? It was
60.
60.
And there, that's why we needed that 60 feet. Oh, here it happens to be Lake Charles. Look at how big, these were very large, 75 feet. So they well exceeded the code requirement. Not sure why, but it does provide larger frontage on those cul-de-sac lots with the bigger radius there. So, and so just to give you an idea, in a short geographic area of town, we have a variety of different cul-de-sac and radii. But ultimately, well, that's what drove this particular easement requirement.
The sidewalks in and everything already?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, at least for the new house, yes, the mm-hmm. house I kept built, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was agenda item 4. Move on to item number 5, is really just a quick update on the sidewalk projects. This is the one that council approved CMT to for that scope of work to survey and design and engineer the sidewalk. That's the limits there. So we did send a letter out to the residents a number of weeks ago in anticipation of the survey crew going out in the field. That work hasn't started yet, but should get going next week. And we do hope to have this whole design effort done here in the winter and spring, with the goal to have a constructible project, ideally in the summer. But for issues that might come up during the design effort in terms of easements that might need to be required, we'll see during the design what shakes out, but that's the tentative schedule.
Now, are we doing the same on the west side, Mayor, I believe, the same? Is that up for bid?
Here's the next slide. This is the upper section up near Hawthorne Trace. Same thing, we had a engineer on retainer, and we're getting them going also for a little study and some survey work. Notices are going out in the mail today. That survey work.
So we don't have to vote on this.
No, this one we happen to have a PO with a consultant engineer that was ready to go. And this one's a little bit unique because we have that major waterline project, and that was part of the scope of this work, will be to study where best that water main will go and if there would be any problems to build a sidewalk ahead of time.
Yeah.
That could be problematic when the water line comes through. Yep. So that's going to be part of the scope. So that's this job's also very similar in terms of survey work, going to start here next week. This one is a sidewalk project that was earmarked in our 5-year plan. It's where all the effort and energy has been focused lately with the Topgolf project. We just redid that whole road. There's no sidewalks out here on Rockside Woods Boulevard North. Embassy Suites has a sidewalk across their frontage that really terminates to the south in grass, and then we extended it when we extended the road across Topgolf. And Topgolf was required to build a sidewalk as well. So this project earmarked some funding in 2020 to build that walk on the west side there.
And we have noticed funds earmarked. Number of people walking
they walk
on the street or in the grass.
We did an oak tree. How successful that was that put in the middle center street?
Yeah, people love it. They use it a lot.
I see a ton of people.
So the question is, considering that here, or just...
Here, the street lights are already out in the center of the boulevard there, and because it already exists at Embassy and Topgolf now on the west side, we just felt it was prudent to keep it on that west side.
No major infrastructure needs with the culvert goes across? We had enough, just north between Kent State and the office building, is there any need for culvert, any width, or are we okay?
We think we can fit it inside between the curb and the guardrail. There is some real estate there that we think we can fit it in.
Okay.
And we're looking to do an 8-foot path to be consistent with, but it just depends. There are some utilities there, maybe some cabinets that stick above ground because there's underground electric and phone through here. So this project, also that budget looks quite high for a sidewalk. It's 500 and some thousand, but that does include decorative street lighting because what's out there now is very standard.
Oh, yeah.
And we've set the new tone now across through with the road extension with the decorative black.
Well, those don't even work half the time.
Yeah, that too. Yeah. So this would include...
When we do 8-foot, how do we plow them in the wintertime? Twice?
Like, I think the center island out on Oak Tree, they might use a pickup truck. That's a 10-footer out in 9 or 10 feet to one on Oak Tree South, so they might jump up there with a pickup. Maybe, I'm not quite sure, to be honest. Leon would know.
And this is more critical now with the traffic increased tremendously with all those cars. I mean, there's cars zipping down there to go to Topgolf now. It's important to have pedestrians off the street.
Ben, you're on top of that street light timing, turning left on that, right?
Yes, I've just emailed the engineer to discuss that specifically.
There's a problem with the traffic coming off 77 and coming eastbound to Rockside Woods northbound. And there's just not enough storage lane for timing. And you sit there, you get a couple of cars and sit there. And so I've asked the engineer to look at having our traffic, our signal people, to see if they can look at the timing where it won't adversely impact the Rockside Road traffic, but still accomplish what we need to accomplish.
Does Officer Samuel still do checks on that?
He's no longer.
No, he's retired.
Yeah, number of years. No, but for receiving some inquiries or complaints, concerns, we sort of respond to issues. And but we do have consultants ready, and Signal Service is always very quick to respond when we have issues and concerns. Okay. So that's the sidewalks update. Moving on to item number 6, potential dedication of Cascade Creek and Meadows. This is a picture of the plat for Cascade, which was...
Before I say that node sign looks nice too. I just, you know, that they put up by the Holiday Inn. And it just went about in the last week or two. They hit the Holiday Inn signs down and the node sign, which is nice. Are the restaurants supposed to be the other? I know there's a couple places on the bottom of the sign that are empty. And just the hotels are on there. I think Spring Hill Suites, Holiday Inn, and the Candlewood. Is that the idea of having Bonefish and...
I thought so.
I don't know if they have to pay money for it to be on that sign. Because I know the thought was that they'd be on there too. We didn't want to put the podiatry school because they're on the other node.
I drove down the other day. We should look at the minutes, the Planning Commission minutes, and see what were the requirements. There was extensive landscaping requirements.
That was when the Holiday Inn was in.
When the Spring Hill Suites was approved. So just like to just pull that up and see if they're conforming to what was approved.
And we invested quite a bit of our own city money to upgrade the road, and we built a sidewalk and street lights.
Restaurants were a little lax on their responsibilities, it seems like, and compared to what the hotels are. Of course, the hotel's all one owner and everything, but it does look nice. I mean, it's a little different than the other, but it really spruces that up nicely. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to, while we're talking about Rockside.
So this is a plat of when Cascade Creek was built as a private drive. I think the primary reason was because of some design standards that weren't met at the time. So in the bottom right corner there, I'm telling you that the existing curved pavement width is 22 feet. Our code typically requires 26 feet. So it was 4 feet shy on width. The thickness is perfect. The thickness is adequate. It's a nice concrete road. So there was no deficiency there on the pavement thickness. But right now, that whole area in yellow, and why you see a red 75, it's really called an easement. All those parcels go all the way to the south, to the corporate limit, and they have accepting an easement for a roadway and utility corridor. So the area highlighted in yellow, for all intent and purpose, could be the simple dedicated area. You could call it a 75-foot dedicated roadway that would encompass all the utilities that are out there very nicely. And you can see these are such deep lots. You probably wouldn't even create any non-conforming issues on the lot size. Setbacks is going to be an issue because the main pushed those homes to the towards the street anyway. Yeah. So you would just that would be, yeah.
The issue is that they have now, it's been there a decade. They've had, and so we can look at the pavement, we can look at an assessment of it. But for the most part, their residents are asking if the city would consider dedicating the road. And I've heard of no complaints relative to the service department's servicing and maintaining, whether it be garbage pickup or snowplow. And so that's why it's probably stood the test of time. The only thing I would suggest is that we take a look at, if we ever want to put a community signage up in the front, entering the city, can we...
We tried to sneak a slide in there. We heard you say that.
Well, you're thinking.
We didn't know exactly if this was what you were...
You know what, it gets the point across.
Yeah, that's right.
We don't have any signage.
Of course, you put it on the curb side of the sidewalk. You gotta walk through the sign to get through the side. That's the intense honorable.
Put it right in front of the ravine there, that'll solve a liability problem, that one lawsuit.
So I guess the only thing is that we should retain some, thank you. Just a bit clarification, I want to make sure that any maintenance issues or any service issues with Cass Creek Creek or Meadow Brook, from your, like garbage trucks or...
No, serviceability, no.
Yeah, serviceability, that's all.
Leon, another question was asked, how do you plow the extra wide sidewalk down the center of the median in...
Oak Tree.
Oak Tree South. You use the wiper twice, or do you just run a pickup truck?
Pickup truck, there's the answer. Thank you.
Is that one yellow, goes in, is that like a sewer or...
Yeah, there was one storm sewer easement that jets out like that, and typically, if, you know, it's not uncommon where we would accept an easement for a storm utility that is from the street and off, you know, discharges off-site to the back creek. So I highlighted that in yellow because I just felt like if we're going to dedicate it, we would probably accept that storm sewer easement as well. Now, the area in blue is their stormwater detention management location. If we treat it similar to Chestnut Woods, we have dedicated roads, and the HOA has responsibilities on the stormwater management. So I didn't put that in yellow per se. Just something to think about and talk about. I'm not saying we can't do it. I'm just saying that that'd be something to discuss.
Well, if we did that, we'd those people up and Chestnut, you know, we're treating them differently. I don't think we'd want to do that.
So...
And the condition of the road is fine.
It's held up really good.
Because that's a member of Chestnut Woods, the homeowner association responsible for cleaning out the base. We want to make sure we're consistent with these laws.
Like every other street.
And we've had occasion to service some sewer issues. There were some sinkholes, things that we would do for any other street, any other residents, safety issues. But the sewers were shown to be fine. There were just, we think, some backfill material settled. So nothing major. It's a nice subdivision.
What are some of the downsides to taking over the road?
Well, it just becomes one more asset, you know, to an obligation to maintain. But it's in such good shape that we'd like all our roads to be as nice as that one.
So. Yeah, as opposed to Meadowbrook.
Yeah, well, I'll show you that one next.
That'll be good. Yeah.
Was Meadowbrook dedicated?
What was the history?
No.
Well, we just do it again.
We just maintain.
What's the history of the street, that it wasn't a dedicated street from the beginning?
It was before my time, but I heard there was some challenges.
Well, there were several different configurations originally. They came when they wanted to put a street off of Dalebrook. There was going to be an entrance past the dark area further east, and then they were going to build houses off of that cul-de-sac, and it was like the people on Dalebrook went nuts because it wouldn't have had to conform to their subdivision, which it doesn't. The ranch homes, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So then they decided, hey, you know what, maybe we'll just put a street in along the property line, this corporate boundary, and this is what the final configuration was, and it built out right away.
Wasn't this part of a lawsuit?
Yeah, because there was originally a 25-foot strip along Dalebrook on both sides, held by one party. Mr. What's his name? Years he spent down the bottom of Dalebrook, and then they bought that easement, and then came in with a subdivision with an access off of Dalebrook, and the way we mitigated the situation and managed it from preventing further lawsuits was we allow this to get put in. And the safety factor being, it's, I've never heard of a safety issue because of the traffic light it's spraying, so it's worked very well.
You know, is there, when these people bought their houses, they knew they were buying into a private drive, is there some sort of homeowners association where they've been setting aside money for, in a reserve for like maintaining that street, or do they have money in an account already?
I believe so.
What happens to that if they're no longer?
I know what I would do, I'd make it, fix everything and make sure that everything is pristine to dilute the fund. Make sure that they have enough in reserve for their maintenance of their retention pond, so they're not strapped when they have a maintenance issue. That's yeah. What I would say. You know, so we're not going to. From my perspective, whenever they have an excess of what we need to make sure it's in pristine condition, they are taking on the key, maintaining the responsibility for the catch basin or the detention basin. So.
We wouldn't refund it to the homeowners, right?
No, no. I would say that's, you're going to keep that as collateral for, as a basis for future maintenance on your, and they do a lot of personal things like the Danbrook Group. They do landscaping. Braywood does its landscaping. They do the own, they do their own landscaping. They would do the same deal we have here. You guys are responsible for maintaining the signage, et cetera.
And I believe the whole south side of that corridor, that road, was reserved to be always vegetated and landscaped.
It is.
There's a buffer.
I haven't put a sign up for us. I think that has to be on there, too.
I think I'd let them keep it for their maintenance and their catch, their retention base.
Is the hydrants, what side are they? On the south side or it's on their side?
I believe they're on the home side. No, I take that back. They might be on that south side.
Mm. I'm trying to picture. I know I've been there a few times.
We could check that out real quick.
Yeah.
So that's really all. So I think we'll check with Greg O'Brien and start. I believe it would be obviously another plat exercise. All those lots would have to get, that 75 feet would get cut off from their deed. Their new deeds would have to be written, so they'd all have to be party to the plat, signing the plat. So there'd be a process, and that we'll start to investigate if there's a desire to pursue it.
So the biggest downside then is the cost of replacing the road probably 35 years down the pike.
And or the maintenance throughout that service life, joint slab repairs, crack seal, things like that. The goal would obviously be to get out there quick and seal up the joints if they hadn't been done by the HOA between when it was built and now. I'm not quite sure. There's still some of the original sealant is still in there in those joints.
But you said they did a good job. With the pavement there.
Mm-hmm.
There's not that much traffic on.
Right. Yep. Moving on, there's an overview of Meadowbrook. This was a slide that we had at a prior Streets and Sidewalks where we were looking at the potential of doing something on the quick and on the cheap to try to improve the condition of that road. And we ran through, we asked Specialized Construction to look at it and kind of give us some unit prices. And
was that in the T-ball?
T-ball
correct. Too, I think.
Yes. And I don't have that on this slide, but right. So you can see real quick the treatment of just do some spot repairs and then chip and seal it and then mastic surface seal it, try to make it black and look new. That would be very cost effective. And then recycle and overlay. We did do some pavement cores out there. Councilman Verver, can you remember that? We went out to see if there was enough material out there to even recycle. They like to recycle 6 inches, and that's exactly what's out there. 6 inch of asphalt on a pretty decent aggregate base.
Mm-hmm.
So the thought there was recycle 6 inches and then overlay with 2 for a total of 8. And that was the second option there with for a little bit more cost, and then a complete replacement with an 8 inch full depth asphalt would be a remove and replace. Was the higher dollar value. And at the time, there was no thought given to maintenance of traffic, drive aprons, all the things that are ancillary. So those costs invariably would probably be, I'm saying, at least double. And
what about the bridge?
Yeah, the bridge, I think, is newer, and it's in decent shape structurally, I think. I think
paid for it.
I gotta believe It was some city participation.
Some city participation.
So.
I know nothing.
So the pavement is pretty terrible, and we took the cores, and some of them just disintegrated. They weren't even strong enough to hold its shape. So it's the likelihood that you could salvage it is probably not high. And particularly if they're going to dedicate it, then you'd probably, we would, I guess it's up to the council. If you want to accept a road that's in bad shape, or if you want to upgrade it before you accept it, that's a part of the discussion.
I think there's a couple of things we need to explore. I wouldn't have any problem recycling overlaying because there's minimum traffic. The concern, more of a concern to me was, would be the maintenance and the rubbish pickup, making sure we have enough of a easement or right of way, or before we dedicate, I want to get enough area in the area between the two houses where we can either legally turn around.
I got to do it now. You sure ain't going down there and turning around?
I just think you, I think you just work off of that. But if they would, if we're going to dedicate, put some money into it, I would think that they'd be interested in at least accommodating our issues for safety and even and serviceability.
School buses.
School, everybody, right.
It is very narrow, 14 feet wide is what's out there. So it's extremely, it's in essence a one-lane road.
How many homes are on there? It looks like just, it'd probably be good to have a meeting with them.
Six, seven?
Six.
Yeah, not that many residents.
Yeah, we definitely have a meeting.
Yeah, and see what their feelings are.
Before we do anything, we at least get a flavor of where council is at. And the street to sidewalks is the most appropriate venue to discuss it.
Question? Either Don or Mayor, do you know if the old situation that existed on Meadowbrook still does regarding my understanding that there is just a single water meter for the entire street and they divvy up the bill between them somehow?
I think it's still done that way.
Non-individually metered?
I know Swalinas used to take care of it. When Mr. Swalinas passed away, the gentleman behind them, I think he does it all now.
So that's an issue I think we've got to be concerned about.
Sure.
We're going to take ownership of the street.
I think they get one water bill and they do.
It's the utilities is not the standard utility situation that we're used to.
That's where we have to get the residents and find out exactly.
Why don't we, we'll get a meeting with the residents. We'll down and we'll start exploring all the issues that they have. They'll bring more issues to our attention than we know. And then we'll talk to them about it and say, hey, we're looking at this, but let's examine all the issues that could influence our decision so that we have a full breadth of what it's going to take to get the city to invest some more resources and also make sure it's a safe and serviceable street.
And we can spend a little bit of time to do some layouts of a cul-de-sac.
So if that's okay with the committee and council members, we'll do that.
As this one isn't as clear-cut as the other one was.
So within the realm of possibility to assess the property owner for some fraction of the cost with this project, or we're just looking at the city to just put this in for?
$47,000 by the time we go through an assessment process.
Double, but just have some skin in the game, and clearly, I compare this to Cascade Creek, where they have a fund. There's cash sitting in an account there, and these people are, you kind of even that out between the two neighborhoods.
Well,
they should have some skin in the game, too.
There may be some other opportunities here if you look at proximity to our property. We may want to, want to leverage the situation to, make it more reasonable and more realistic for the city to invest some money there.
That's the street that is one up from Busker that goes down to
Tanglewood.
Was that a private road one time too?
Yeah, the Nike site.
Yeah.
That serviced the Nike site at one time.
Because that's similar in size to this one and everything.
It's one way, right?
It's one way. Right.
Versus here, it's not.
Yeah, there's no other.
With curves and asphalt in between, but no sidewalk. Because it was so narrow there.
Yeah.
So.
How long ago, I mean, that's owned by the city now, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Is that a long time ago that they?
Yeah, it's been long, we have been. That's when Richard Lee cut it off and put a chain link across it.
Oh, that's right. Remember that?
He's not liked me ever since.
Was it?
At the time, I didn't even live down there.
Yeah.
What's his name, put a Tractor Drive in there now?
Brown?
No.
Oh, a German?
German.
Yeah.
Well, it's not really private.
I mean, you wanna let the kids walk on it.
He's already.
Really?
They gotta walk, on your property, on Danny's property, on the grass.
Come on.
That's questionable, who owns Tanglewood east of Ever.
I think that's.
Well, he paid to have the blacktop put in.
And German did?
Yeah.
And is Brown still at the end?
Brown's still at the end, too. Brown's before you go onto the school's property.
Right, they're the last one.
So, I don't know. But we'll get a meeting with the people and have a discussion before we, and we'll come back to the council and say, here's some thoughts. I'll make sure that the council's invited to that meeting so that they can participate.
Just so Ken is aware, though, the city did pave Meadowbrook in the past, years ago, back in the '70s. So there's a little bit of history there, whereas the other development basically was put in as a development. So there's, you know.
I don't think, nothing's been done since then.
Yeah, since the '70s.
Yeah.
And that's what I heard from a couple of.
Did we put a base in or we just blacked out?
We patched it.
Put a what?
Did we put a base in and put a street in, or we just blacktopped over the top of Meadowbrook?
Back in the '70s?
Over the years, we've cosmetically fixed, over the years.
Yeah, but it's not much there.
No. There's enough for just grinding overlay. We're 6 inches of base, so you grind that. Make that work.
And from a maintenance traffic standpoint, that would be least impactful to the people, because that's.
Right, you come in and do it.
Recycling, yeah, it's almost.
Yeah, I think we should look at the condition of the culvert. And then we should create some, we'll go out there and do some, we'll invite everybody to a meeting. And then all the parties are tangent to the property or part, use the road.
At the end of the cul-de-sac, the homes are so tight, there, you know, there's no way to create space.
Well, I'm just thinking about where the property line is on that one side. That may be an area we could put some type of a little turnaround in there, or back into.
Well, one of the questions we were talking about before is what plow trucks they would use to plow that. You know, using the big one doesn't make a lot of sense.
Probably the 550.
Yeah, and also the question, the thing that beats up the road the most is if they're taking that hopper truck, you know, the big truck down in there.
Yeah.
And with the bin on the front, that even complicates being able to turn it around compared to the, you know, the side loaders and the back loader that we used to have.
Yeah, there's opportunity here to talk about. I think there might be some win-win here.
Okay, moving on to the next item, just a construction project update. These are the big four jobs that are still ongoing at Trent's, extended to two different construction seasons. Lafayette, that job's been in shutdown for the winter. What I tried to show you here is percent complete from two different standpoints. One from a cost, money earned to date as a percentage of the total contract value. That's the top item, the top line there. And then from a contract duration in terms of time elapsed on the contract. And just, we like to see the percentages mirror up just to kind of give you a barometer of the job's going well or is on target, on schedule. And for the most part, you can see everything to the right of the first one is pretty much tracking pretty well. The one on the far right just got going 3 weeks ago, so it's really early, but they're making good production. The weather's cooperating with this winter, or underground storm sewer work. It's been very, very conducive.
Yeah, I haven't heard anyone that got a handful of issues, complaints. That's good.
Yeah, it's been great. Both jobs between DeJoya down at Lower Brookside Bramley and then Katz now with Upper Brookside. It's a lot of work going on out there. Big equipment, big trucks.
I've heard a lot of good things on Lower Brookside.
Yeah.
I mean, is that DeJoya? The residents seem to be real pleased with that.
I heard the same thing about Katz up on, I went to a wake the other day and the residents up on the top end were saying the contractor was very friendly. As a matter of fact, at Joya Street, I have to write a letter to the one employee. They went when Teresa Semprak, before she passed away, they went in and helped first aid as a first responder. The guys, the construction guys.
Wow.
So, what's her name, told me that just couldn't thank them enough for, she just yelled outside and they came running. So I just got their names.
So real quick, by way of update, Lafayette, you see there, there's, we're a little bit of a debate in terms of the contract duration. You know, there was some extra conditions out there that warranted some extra work that they're probably obligated to get some time. Those two storm, rear yard storm sewer alternates took a couple weeks of additional time. That was an alternate that they probably entitled to some time. And one item that's just for your own knowledge, the way the bid was set up, about 30% of all the curb and gutter that's out there in that subdivision was earmarked to be replaced because it was in poor condition. The other 70%, so there's roughly 10,000 feet of total curb and gutter footage-wise. And right now, the job as it was bid is for just replacing what's bad and leaving what's good. And you know what that's going to end up getting you at the end of the job, in a nice asphalt overlay with what will look like patch, you know, some old stuff against new stuff. And so if you care, I can pursue asking the contractor to see if we could get some better unit pricing, because it's priced for kind of piecemeal. It's high
unit
price.
It would be cheaper if they could just go in and slip form the whole curb.
And they typically give you a much better price.
Right, so yeah. I would, if the committees, at least we ought to explore that possibility, get some costs associated with it.
Yeah, it always makes more sense to go big. What do you think, Dave?
For the
to get unit pricing for the whole curb section rather than
I see part of that it. Makes sense. Tom? Yes, definitely.
Well, I'm partial to it.
Yeah. And the project,
but I'm right.
I know,
but it's the right way to do it.
Yes.
Looking at, you know, piecemeal a project on a brand new street, you have new sidewalks. And then you're going to have 5 feet of this, 10 feet of old, 5 feet, you know. And I don't want to say anything because I live there, but really, I mean, we don't do that kind of work anywhere else in town.
No.
You know, if you're going to make it look nice and do it right, it's not going to be done again for another 25, 30 years.
And if you look at Evergreen and Tanglewood, I mean, that looks like a brand new reconstructed subdivision, even though we just mill and fill, but we replaced all the concrete.
Yeah, they slip formed it, accommodated the aprons for everything, everything matched up.
Sure, that's the way to do it.
Looks a lot.
Yeah,
we ought to at least explore that before they.
Right.
Before they get started.
More labor, cutting joints and then digging them out, putting them out,
For a little bit more,
Because they got to drill, they have to drill them out for the attachment pieces and everything else.
The metal. Yeah. Okay, so we'll engage the contractor, see if he can, what he can do. And that would then probably precipitate then a little bit more time required, or it might speed it up. He slip forms, you know, lots of footage in a day.
Can you give us the split difference between what that would be, the curb cost, compared to the other one, so we can look at the two?
Yeah, we'll come back.
Yeah.
Now's a good time. There's a lull here in the work. Right. And so.
What about the complementary, the new development piece? Where are they? Lee.
What's going on?
Corey Lee. Thank you.
I don't want them to do that after we put a new road in. Yeah.
Well, no, that was the goal. The goal was they were supposed to be working at the same time. That's why, I didn't see anything, seemed like it was moving along there.
Yeah.
Can you check that out?
We have to, we'll circle back with the owner.
You know, we wanted to line that up. That's the whole purpose that
we didn't want to have the big trucks going up there after we finished Lafayette.
Right.
Real quick, Brookside Bramley, we're also looking at what it would cost to put curb and gutter on all of Brookside within from Brecksville Road East to Bramley, because all of Bramley's getting new, completely reconstructed. But as Bramley or Brookside was designed, it was going to stay an uncurbed pavement with some shallow swales. But we're going to look and see what the price would be to
both sides.
Curb and gutters on both
curb
sides.
And gutter. Are you talking about the sweeping one, or
like the roll,
roll
curb and gutter.
Yeah, we should just put the jobs curb and gutter.
So that's something that
Upper Brookside?
Up to Brent.
Upper Brookside, what kind of curbing do we have?
That's a type C.
That's not the road.
It's different. For good reasons. We have good reasons for that, yeah.
And it doesn't make sense with the hills on the east Brookside? It still makes sense there to have the curved ones, even though a lot of it's just as steep?
It's kind of, because it's straight, you know, there's not a lot of horizontal curvature.
Don't have the curves.
Yeah, straight shot versus a hard 90-degree bends where you could be, start to get lateral into a curve.
Okay.
That was the premise. So these jobs are moving good through the winter, and we'll come back, you know, maybe for future updates to tell you financially how the jobs are doing, but I don't have that prepared here now. And that segues us into Upper Brookside. As we mentioned at the resident meeting about the potential opportunity, because Katz is a concrete contractor and they know how to pour concrete pavement, the potential to non-perform the asphalt work and upgrade to a full-depth concrete road. And that's definitely what we recommend. This is the pricing. The memo that I put together on the agenda helps you understand some of the recent pricing that we did pull the trigger on some jobs. And it's very consistent. I'd say it's even better because we're going to get an 8-inch thick concrete pavement up there because it's more of a county route and not a residential road. Seven inches is the minimum. So we're getting an extra inch, and it's going to be a nice 6-inch aggregate base. So we feel like this is a good way to go, and it actually will save some time because with getting an asphalt subcontractor in to do things half at a time, it's just terribly cumbersome. A lot of coordination. This way, one guy gets to do it all. He controls the schedule, and he's chomping at the bit to hit this first thing in the spring.
Just like Brett.
Incentivized, yeah.
Just like Brett, because they were able to work one side, and people had a place to park across the street.
Right, so it'll be cumbersome, but it's a nice way to do
it. Is that on the agenda?
It is. I wanted to talk here first. We sort of got verbal buy-in at the resident meeting. We broached the topic.
We could go back to Lafayette subdivision for one second.
Mm-hmm.
Now that we've cut down some trees to make sidewalks equal on both sides, I hope the trees are going to go between the street and the tree line and the sidewalk, because now we got 7 feet, four, you know, we're getting close to the easement, right?
Mm-hmm.
But some people left their trees. So we're going to have trees on the inside of the sidewalk and then three or four trees on the outside of the sidewalk. It's going to look not right.
Yeah, I think we talked about trying to clean that all up.
Clean it all up.
Yeah, be consistent.
Start from scratch again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And put the right kind of trees on.
Yeah, and I think we'll use some flexibility in where to put the trees too, rather than right under the lines.
Right.
Yeah. We're going to use a more landscape approach to it than a stay in the right of way. This is the way it's going to be. So that 15 years later, they're cutting trees.
Yeah.
Well, Don has a list with how they grow, where they go. I mean, we've adjusted the list some, correct?
Species.
Species types and variety, so we get a mix of species. So
that's good.
That's something we're looking at.
We're going to clean it up, though. That's the only way to do it.
One thing on the $90,000. That's still a very accurate price, but one thing you have to understand, what I want to make you aware of. Oh, and this is just giving you an idea. So, you know, for the Phase 2 project, we had earmarked about $1 million for that piece from Lake Charles South to Sprague. Mm-hmm. That's what that million is. We think it's heavy, and we think it could then absorb a change like this. Okay. So even in Phase 1, that's why we put the slide there.
Excuse me.
But one thing to understand, seeing there, when we go to what happens now, when we're going to the concrete, becomes more of a reconstruction as opposed to a resurfacing or rehabilitation. So it triggers an EPA issue with stormwater quality treatment. And the circles are meant to show you potential, we call them stormwater manholes, stormwater quality manholes that are required to treat the water before they discharge it. And the reason there's so many is there's different discharge points because of the watershed. So in essence, you have to capture it and treat it before you discharge it off-site. And that's what these are. Circles are meant to be the locations. This exhibit is gives you an idea of what these are, what they do. This one happens to be one of the rather larger ones that were, technology-wise, they were early in the timing of when these things came about. They've gotten more streamlined and more condensed, and we think they can be a smaller footprint, but in essence...
One of those in the other section?
Right, so, yeah, so in the phase one, so that's what I'm trying to get at, that these things cost about, at least the one we had on, in the bid on Breton, was about $35,000. So you multiply that by the potential to have five, that will have to be a cost that we have to absorb and contend with. But I think the $1 million, that's why I put it there, the $1 million, I think, can absorb that in the budget.
As long as the contractor doesn't think that's what he should bid to.
Yeah, right, I mean, we have good, we know what these things cost for manufacture, and it's really just an installation then component to get you to the total cost.
So that's what's going in there on Breton?
Breton, right, well, it's not this exact one. In fact, I have a, this is an exhibit of the one for Breton. It's more what we call inline, pipe comes into this, it looks like a manhole, but it's crazy deep. There's a sump for sediments to dump out, and then you see floatable trash rise to the top, and then hydrocarbons also rise to the top. So it treats, it's an EPA requirement to treat the stormwater.
How big is that unit, just roughly?
That thing's pretty big. In fact, we have one out here on Sealig. When we put Sealig in, we have one of these things where the water kind of goes 90 degrees into this chamber, and then gets discharged back, in theory, cleaning.
Is it 10 by 10, 10 by 20?
There's some of them are biggest based on the area that it's treating, the amount of water and volume that's coming to it. So it varies. They could be big, they could be small. But oh,
And those caps or lids?
They're traditional manhole lids.
They're in the street or they're on the side?
Yeah, they would be in, typically they're in the street, yep. Or if your storm sewer is off in the tree lawn, it would be in the tree lawn. They're pretty much right over top of. Mm-hmm. In fact, this one, this exhibit, it would look like a standard manhole on the surface of the ground. Mm-hmm. But it's then the access points that our jet truck can get down and vacuum out, suck out the debris. And
so that one looks smaller for the one for Breton than you originally told us last year.
Well, this one was the one we were always talking about. But it's big, it's deep, it's heavy.
I thought it looked something like that. Well, over Breton.
Yeah, this is a newer generation.
Okay.
And this is a
crane have to bring it in?
Yeah, because they're big and heavy. Yep, this is a crane issue. So I'm not sure the ones up at... We're hoping that we can get more like this up at Upper Brookside.
And that's all because we want the concrete?
Not concrete, reconstruction. So we could reconstruct the road even with asphalt, but because you cross a threshold of disturbed area, mm-hmm. and that's what the trigger is. But it's a cost that we have to...
I can do good and get nailed together.
Yeah. So I'm just bringing it up because it's kind of part and parcel with... When you make the decision to reconstruct with concrete, you get stuck. And it's a requirement that we're forced to...
How often do you need to maintain? In other words, you said it separates floatable stuff from sediment. So you got to take sediment out, and you have floatable stuff. How frequent is that going to need to be dealt with?
It's not very often. I think this one has been out here at Sealy for probably pushing 8-9 years, and we've probably been in it a couple times.
So you just monitor it?
Our service department would.
Just monitor it, and if need be, then you go in.
Yeah, I think the conservative approach would be to get in it every couple of years, put it on a routine maintenance schedule.
Just like a catch bay, regular catch bay.
And if it's easily accessible, you can drive the truck up. And I think, so that's really what I want to talk about by way of the upper Brookside.
That's an additional cost at $229?
Well, this is a different item now. This is Hemlock Trail change order. It's the next item on the agenda.
Well, while you're going the wrong way, four times I've been up to the upper Brookside.
Okay.
The workers there are very accommodating, you know, to get the traffic through. They're paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really very, very good group, though, that CATS group.
Yeah, and it's a very tight, congested area. Not a lot of extra room.
They've got the big one that's digging, the one that's compacting, plus all the additional equipment there, and they're making it work.
Mm-hmm.
They're making it work very well.
They don't bark, they just do it.
Oh, yeah, we had one minor concern from a resident about a noisy plate, that overnight, traffic hit in, but, I think they took care of it pretty quick. So yeah, they've been paving. So this change order, so my request is then, before we leave this one, that just because we know that we're probably at least going to have one of these stormwater structures for the phase one down there by the highway culvert, I would ask you to consider adding $35,000. We could absorb that in a contingency that's in the job, so I don't think we would need to do it right away, but just to be on the up and up and being transparent and just to advise you that we will have to absorb that cost, so we could add it to the 90 and ask for, you know, the one.
125.
Yeah, or just stick with the 90, and then we'll see how the job goes and see if our contingency money can cover it and come back later. We'll definitely have to make sure we buy them for the phase two anyway. Mm-hmm. And we'll need a subsequent change order to add that work or bid it out separately. That's still kind of on the table for discussion. And one thing to note too with this change order on the pavement, that they, CATS is willing to honor that even for a phase two, this concrete pricing. Oh, for the phase two from Lake Charles to Spray, even though that's not in their scope, wasn't in their bid, they would honor it because, you know, they would, in theory, then just get additional work added to their contract.
So are we at the point that we're going to, for phase two, is going to, we're set up with CATS? Is that the...
We're getting to the point where that design is going to get finalized here in the next, later this month or early March, so that we could be in a position to then pull the trigger on the change order or decide to bid it separately.
Okay, so it could go either way.
It still could go either way. Yeah, I'm just putting it out there that he's agreed to honor his prices, yeah, even on this alternate.
I'd go with the same company.
Do you have to bid it out?
No, we don't have to. I don't believe we have to.
Why waste the money?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really an extension.
Using the same dollars that you're using for phase one.
Right. I just didn't want you to think it's you have no choice.
I got it.
Yeah, that's it's not an option.
If you have a different company, it doesn't make sense. I mean, consistent.
Well, it's mobilization. Just like doing sidewalks continually. This makes sense to if the price is right.
So I don't know if you need a motion to vote for the 125, or do you want to stick with the 90? Something to think about. Doesn't have to be decided now. Something we could talk about on the caucus on Tuesday for the $35,000.
Well, I think it makes sense to go with the bigger number.
I think, yeah, I think so too. This way,
you don't need it.
You need to come back to us again.
I would just add it because then the next floor would just be less.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Okay. Well, then maybe we'll amend the legislation.
There's a motion that Debbie did
for the amount.
We don't need to do that here, right? You can just amend.
We can do it like
the caucus.
At the caucus.
Right. We can do it in caucus.
At the caucus.
Yeah.
Okay. And then this is the same memo that I prepared in November with the intent to have it on the December council meeting, and it was removed from the agenda. Time has gone by. Don't have too much to add other than the fact that the contractor is still, I feel like this money is owed to him. It was money that we were directing him all along to do certain work that I just lost track of the dollars for.
Weren't we looking at the design work as far as recouping some of that money?
Yes.
Yep. I think is Greg O'Brien their firm looking at that?
I believe Legal is quite involved with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, they engaged.
They thought that maybe their Arizona emissions would pay, you know, without having to go to court and everything. But it was I think it was what we discussed, there was really a design flaw that
for
it wasn't bid out properly.
Yes, yeah. A good chunk of the money.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What was the original number?
For
when
the
first came to us? No.
Oh, the change order?
Yeah.
It's right there. It was always 229-00.
That has not changed.
Well, the 229-004 went up nominally because of some last item that came through for a bond. See the last item there for $600, what is it?
Oh, yeah.
$868. Because the job extended in time, his bond cost went up. So that was a last-minute item that added to what I had previously. So now the new number, that's why I've got it listed there in larger font size, is the new final number that the legislation would have to get amended to.
Vern, do you know what Legal said about this at all? I don't know if you were involved in this or not.
There is it R.E. Warner?
Correct.
Yeah,
correct.
I believe that's who Legal has reached out to start the discussion about the city not being happy with what transpired and trying to see if a resolution can be negotiated before any actual legal, formal legal steps are taken.
So that'd be part of this money that we'd be recouping? Part of this $229, I said?
Yes. This, there again, just to try to put things in the context, this is a slide that I tried to show at the last meeting relative to how expensive some of these trails are, and that even with the increased dollar value, we're still...
Less per mile.
Yeah, we're still doing well in terms of what the Metro Parks has paid for some recent trails. And then that number at the bottom was really just to show you the GPI, our construction manager, their contract was $360,000, and as a percent of the original contract was 11.63. They've held their, they did not need to increase their contract, which I thought was a bonus feather in their cap and ours, and in essence, it lowered their percentage of the construction a little bit. So just that was the intent of that slide. And then lastly, this slide is really just to help understand, you know, the mayor talks about an accordion, that sometimes the workload goes up and goes down, and our accordion pretty much exploded last year with a significant amount of millions of dollars worth of contracts. And that's, it's not an excuse, it's just a reason where I was challenged to oversee that Hemlock Trail to the degree that I should have, and lost track of it a little bit. But trying to put the $229,000 in the context of all the dollar value of projects we were managing, it's really a minor, it's less than a percent when you're looking at $28-30 million worth of contract work. And admittedly, some of those four big jobs are still going on this year, so not all 30 took place last year, but they're still active jobs. And so 229 in the context of a $3 million job looks pretty, you know, doesn't look too good. But when you put it in the context of everything that we were trying to manage last year and even continuing on this year, it's a much less percent. And I just wanted to, you know, bring that. We put this map together, I think, for the mayor coming in into office. He wanted to see everything. And it wasn't until we went through this exercise where we were shocked at, and then we understood why it felt like we were running 1,000 miles an hour, still could never catch up.
Yeah.
And
so this year,
and we're still running. But
this year we're just getting, we're finishing all the project. They're really, so just the two sidewalk projects, or the east and west hillside are the only new projects we're working on.
So we do have some other infrastructure jobs in our 2020 plan, but right, we might be designing them versus building them. We might take the year to design them and bid them towards the end of the year and again get it early started.
Early start.
Yeah, so right,
bid like early enough so we can get a one construction season.
So that's really all I had.
Just to recap this down, I mean, I'm not putting the blame on you whatsoever. So I don't. I mean, you have to keep, you know, saying that there was a lot of stuff going on. But when I look at the detailed printout of some of the costs, that's what I'm questioning. So, like that $44,000 or whatever for, you know, wood poles instead of metal poles. I mean, it's just not a realistic cost. That's why I pushed to have legal look at some of this stuff. But as far as your ability to track this, I understand. There was a million things going on last year. So I'm not pushing, you know, I'm not pushing for an answer from you. I'm pushing for an answer on some of the costs of what they gave us. That's what I'm after.
Yeah, and I was a little bit removed from a lot of the day-to-day decisions. I had a guy in my office that was really integral to coordinate with both the contractor and with our construction manager. So a lot of those decisions, you know, his job was to get it built.
Like number 40, install 4x4 wood signposts and Lewis steel poles.
Right. Yeah, I guess the global answer to your question was that GPI, you know, worked with our, you know, worked and lobbied on our behalf to, I think they said they stand behind all these costs that were negotiated and agreed upon, and felt that there were good reasons for every dollar that was spent. But I don't dispute that you can look at any one of those items and question it. They did have backup. We put a lot of those change order documentation up on some site that you could all access, and it was very detailed. And I didn't necessarily go to any of them and look to see specifically. We could on that particular one and see, but...
But just realistically, there's 100 posts. That's $2,700 a post. Come on.
Yeah, I think a lot of...
You could do one every 2 weeks and make a good living. It's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know too much of the particulars on any one, on any given one of these, but I just know in general, when a contractor's asked to do things in a certain, I mean, that might be out of sequence or what they feel is, cost is costing more than if they would have bid it that way. And this might have been somewhat after the fact, and he had to take precautions with smaller equipment, not to damage. And there's sometimes a lot of a domino effect of when you ask them to do what type of work, and that sometimes drives up costs. And that may have been contributed to the high unit cost there on that particular item.
Even like the tree guards, I think a lot of those were destroyed. I mean, they looked like they weren't protecting too much. I mean, some of those I've seen, they're already gone or laying down or whatever.
Right. Yeah, this was a difficult job. But we feel that the contractor was great to work with. He did a really good job. I think that finished product is something that we think will last a long time. It's a nice amenity to the city. And we feel like, and that's why I'm asking permission to bring it back and get it on the agenda. It's not on the current agenda, but my request is to, if you consider putting it back on the agenda for next week for a vote.
I guess I would want to talk to legal about it, see some of these things. I mean, number 33, repair 304 base due to rain event. Is there any kind of insurance that we had that would cover that cost because of, you know, a disaster, a natural disaster? I don't know. I mean, it's $16,000.
I feel more comfortable if Greg gave us a report on how far along they are with our... Yeah. I don't want to be premature and pay for this and then that doesn't get resolved, because I think we need to have some of this money recouped on some of the issues.
Right, I understand. Yeah, it's much more palatable when...
It is great.
It's money that's coming from somebody else.
Yeah, if you can report to us, then maybe we'd put on the March agenda. At least we have to know where they are in their discussions, because...
And just, you know, I think I mentioned it in the record once before, that ultimately, our contract with J.D. Williamson is separate from our design contract with R.E. Warner. I think it was even brought up that potentially R.E. Warner should pay J.D. Williamson direct. Instead of paying us the money that we were going to recoup, they should just write the check to J.D. Williamson. And in a perfect world, that might work and might make sense. But contractually, you know, the city has a contract with J.D. Williamson, and they feel that this money is owed to them by the city properly, you know, versus some second, third party. But we did have a design contract, no dispute. We had a design contract direct with R.E. Warner.
And they've been paid already there already.
Right. Yes, that happened earlier on. So...
That's my recommendation to the committee, just that we get a report from legal just to see where we stand before we decide to put this back on the agenda.
Yeah, I would agree.
And I believe they probably could report on what's been happening. Okay. That's the last item on the agenda.
Very good.
Any other questions or items to be brought before this group? Thank you, Ken, for joining us.
Good to be here. Glad to hear this all. I'm excited.
Thank you, Don.
I'm looking for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Don, is it possible for somebody to slide?